Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Liberty Talk FM.
It's a marvelous night for a moon dance with the stars above in your eyes. A fantabulous night to make romance neath the cover of October skies. You know the leaves on the trees are falling to the sun.
What's up? What's up, everybody? Welcome aboard to the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horwitz, and it's time for my friend Mike Brown from Brown Capital, Brown Investment. What is the formal name of your company, sir?
Brown Capital.
Brown Capital. What's your website, my boy?
Browncapital.org.
All right. And that's my friend Mike Brown, ex of the L.A. Dodgers, current baseball coach, great dad, always running around doing something athletic, but also one of the best financial guys I know. So, Mike, if we took a look back at the year 2015, what would be your take of 2015?
A lot of noise, not much movement. So we're gonna feel like we're gonna finish the year flat to maybe up or down a percentage point. You know, fair amount of volatility within a very tight range is kind of what it's been for the last 6 months or so.
Now we talk about volatility. Are you talking about price volatility, not actual VIX volatility? Because we haven't had any really fear volatility. I mean, there was a couple of moments here and there, but there really hasn't been, I think, with the exception of August 24th, any real major fear in the market. What do you think? What do you say?
Yes, yeah, for sure. I mean, the 24th, we obviously had some spikes in the VIX, but now mostly it's been just price churn. And like I said, we've had a pretty tight corridor that, you know, 17.2, 17.3 on the Dow to the low 18s. And not a lot of movement this year in either direction.
Now, when you look at it, and again, you know, we're at 18,000 or, you know, thereabouts. I mean, you know, a 1 point move, you know, 1% move, 180 points, people get, don't you think people focus too much on the size of the move? Because it's no different than a $20 move when the Dow was 2,000. It's no different if you had a $180 stock that went down, you know, 1%. I mean, so are people too worried about that?
Yeah, I think, you know, the 24-hour news cycle contributes to that. I mean, it's, you know, a triple-digit move is not what it was when the Dow was at, you know, like you said, 2,000 or 3,000 or 4,000. You know, now that we're bumping around 18,000, you know, 180-point move is 1%. So, but I think it's, again, I think it's a lot of noise. I don't think there's a lot of substance there. You know, when we get 400 or 500-point moves, obviously, that's a little more, you know, eye-popping. But it's become pretty difficult for it to trade in a, you know, 100 to 200 point range in the course of the day.
Yeah, I mean, because again, it's just gyrating back and forth. I mean, you know, we never, you know, pay attention, you know, when a stock does it. I mean, hell, there's stocks, you know, Google can trade 30 or 40 bucks in a day every day, you know. So, I mean, it's only, the numbers have only gotten bigger, but the percentage changes are still pretty much the same. And I think that's, you know, if we have a, you know, just to put it in mind, I mean, if you go back to 1987, we had a 30% decline overnight, okay? So that would be 5,000 points. That's a little bit different than, you know, 180. I mean, it's a churn. So what was your take? What's your take as an economic cycle? And where do you think we are in this cycle?
I think we're getting late in the cycle. You know, I think we're in the sixth, seventh inning of this cycle. It hasn't been a particularly robust cycle by any measure. And I do think we're late in it. The low oil prices and that may extend it a little bit, but as far as most cycles go, I mean, for the bull market, what are we in, the 72nd month, something like that? So it's historically, we are late in the cycle.
Yeah, I mean, it's certainly late in the cycle. Now, again, we don't know, and we don't pick tops and bottoms or predict the market. But why, in your opinion, are, you know, oil was $9 or $10 when we made our first high during the internet era. So why is oil so important now?
It's become a bigger part of the economy. You know, back then, you know, the United States, I think, was producing maybe a million barrels a day. and now we're producing $9 million. So a lot of money moved to that sector. So I, you know, it's a bigger part of the S&P. There's certainly a lot of paper out there that was, you know, taken when money was easy, you know, and money was easy from the energy companies. And now you're going to, you know, probably next year the hedges come off, you're going to see some defaults in that. So I think that's why it's a bigger part of the conversation than maybe it was in 1999. And I do remember those $9 and $10 oil days. Those were interesting days.
I mean, you know, I understand the cycle, but, you know, we're first of all, on one hand, we go, well, oil, cheaper oil is going to benefit the consumer, and but wait, oil's going down, so the market's going down. Is that more of a cause of this whole deflationary environment we have right now?
I think so, yeah. I mean, you look at it, you know, there's demand is actually increasing. I think demand is up this year. It was up in 2015 by, you know, 1.5 million barrels a day. But the supply is up over 2.7 million. So you've got OPEC. It's a, you know, it's a price war. OPEC is trying, basically Saudi Arabia is trying to drive out, drive market share and drive out some of the U.S. frackers. And, you know, it's creating the deflation across the board in all the commodities. You're seeing, you know, 7-year lows for copper. Same thing for aluminum, obviously oil. We're back, you know, we're not quite back to where we were in 2009 at $33 a barrel, but, you know, we're trending that way.
So, you know, as you look around and, you know, now you, are you a fan of oil down here? I mean, I think I look at oil and I go, if we look out a year in advance, I mean, oil's trading at a $10 premium than it is to today. So are you a fan of oil down here? Do you think it's something that you'd look at, or is it still, you're still waiting for it to make even a bigger bottom?
I think you got to start dipping your toe in it if you're not already. I mean, if anything, we've been too early on the oil. But if you look out 3 to 5 years, you know, I think you've got potential for a lot of upside here from, you know, mid-30s. You know, it would not surprise me to look out a couple of years and see oil at $70 a barrel. Because what's happening is, you know, when you have this, you know, supply glut, you know, OPEC cannot continue to pump at the levels they're pumping now. And you've seen the rig count in the U.S. go from 1,600 rigs down to 574. Now, that stuff can be brought back on, but... you know, you're going to continue to see demand grow as we have more and more people on the face of this planet. And if that's the case, then, you know, oil, where the bottom is, I've heard people throwing out $20 a barrel, you know. And in the near term, you know, with the supply glut we have, anything's possible. But long term, 3 to 5 years, you're going to see oil significantly higher than it is for, than it is today.
And I would agree. And look, you know what? Now, as bearish as I am, the stock market, you know, I don't know if it'll be 3 years from today, but 20 years from today, the market will be higher than it is today, too, because, as you and I both know, markets, they run in cycles like anything else, and over the 100-year history or whatever of Wall Street, it goes up year over year. It just doesn't go up every year, and I think this is a time, and when we come back from the break, I want to talk to you a little bit about hedging. Because I think it's important that the individual understands about their portfolio and things you can do to stay in the market. But, I mean, those are things that I want you to think about. But as we get ready to step out of a break, we're with our man, Mike Brown, who has been a regular contributor all year long and a great guy. And your website is, sir?
It is browncapital.org.
And if we want to get a hold of you, how do we do that?
You can reach me at 309-674-1040.
And I urge you to check him out because, again, as you know, the people that I have on the show, when we get in these conversations, I believe in what they do, and I think they've got a good handle, a great feel on markets, and they've always got your best interest at heart. So we're with the Bubba. This is the Bubba Show with Mike Brown, and we want you to check out thebubbashow.org or bubbatrading.com and see what we're talking about, as well as our hedging program. And also, to get the show on demand, you go to libertytalk.fm, and you can go back to any episode you want. This is the Bubba Show. Todd and Bubba Horowitz will be right back after the break. The Bubba Show.
All right, boys, follow me. Mostly in A.
I Welcome back to the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horwood with my friend and one of my chief financial guys, Mike Brown from browncapital.org. And so, Mike, you know, we talk about hedging, and, you know, I believe, and I don't want to put words in your mouth because I want you to, you know, say what you think, but I believe that having a well-rounded hedged portfolio allows you more latitude in markets when you're trading, and because you can absolve yourself of a big portion of the risk to the downside, it actually allows you to create a compounding endowment model on your own portfolio. What do you think?
Oh, I absolutely agree. I mean, I think it's a fantastic strategy. It's one that you need, you know, it needs to be executed by a professional like yourself, but it is it's certainly, when you know we're sitting near all-time highs in the indexes, is as good a time as any to certainly protect yourself on the downside, because we're going to get pullback. You know, we had a 10% pullback in August. You know, there's going to be corrections in the market over time. There always is. And, you know, it allows you to have to minimize your risk and be able to take advantage of those corrections, and will help you in the long term increase your rates of return.
And I mean, that's, I mean, look, and I think one of the big problems in today's world, Mike, is there's too many people, you know, we've got too much technology. You know, people are looking at their long-term investment. I mean, you know, you're 35 years old and you put your money in an IRA and you're looking at your IRA every 20 minutes on your phone. I mean, that's not the right way to be approaching that type of investment, is it?
No, not at all. It certainly has made, I think it's hurt the retail investor in a lot of ways. Certainly saw that in 08 and 09, which is, the, you know, people were first being able to log on and look at their 401ks and their IRAs on a daily basis. And the reality was, if you didn't do that and just sat tight, you know, you've recovered all of your losses and you're, you know, several thousand points ahead of where the Dow, well, the Dow's more than triple off its 2009 lows. So, you know, if you just sat tight, everything turned out fine. Unfortunately, a lot of people panicked and, you know, and where was your chance to get back in after March of 2009? You know, it had gone pretty well straight up from there. So, but yeah, you got to take a long-term view. Don't log on. You should look at it once every 6 months, rebalance your portfolio once a year, and, you know, trust in the long-term that the market is going to move higher.
Yeah, I mean, because if you that's why I say always be hedged, then it doesn't matter, because when the market does sell off, you move your hedge down, you take that profit from the hedge, you're not making money on your positions, but you're making money on the hedge portion, basically protecting you where you are, and then you take that money and you reinvest it back into those same equities, and now you have more shares, so you're always lowering your basis. Isn't that an important thing to be able to do, to lower your basis without having to come up with more money to drop it in?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And with the weekly options hedge, you know, that's there for people to do. And, you know, obviously it takes some expertise, which you and the Badger have. But, yeah, it's definitely a way to be able to take a long-term view and be protected.
You know, it's funny because I often get asked when I'm on air, and they say, well, would you buy this stock just for dividend? And I always have to answer no on air, because I would not buy a stock just for dividend, because if I buy a stock, you know, for a 5% dividend, but the stock loses 30%, my 5% didn't do me so good, right?
Yeah. We're seeing a lot of that illustrated in the energy market right now. You know, we had Kinder Morgan slash their dividend a few weeks back, and Freeport MacMoran cut theirs. So you better know why. You better know the company's prospects. And, you know, there's ones where the dividend, you know, you see them reaffirm the dividend even in this time period. So, you know, you're right. If the stock goes down, you know, 25%, you know, if you got a long-term view in the dividend and you're reinvesting it, they maintain the dividend, you know, you'll probably be over the long term, you'll be all right. But that's a dividend. You better know that it's secure and that the prospects of the company long term are good if you're doing it.
But I'll give you an example. I don't want to get any specific names because obviously we don't want to have that part of the problem. But let's take an example. You see a stock that's trading at $40. And it's paying an 8% yield. Okay, obviously very good. But the first thing you know about an 8% yield is little bit more risk to the equity because they're not they ain't paying 8% if there's not a little risk, if they're not trying to get more money in. But okay, so we get that. But now your $40 stock in a year goes from 40 to 20. So the 8% isn't helping you because if you put a, if you bought 1,000 shares, you've now got $20,000. You did get 5% back, but your net nut is in half, and that creates a little bit more problem for the individual investor, does it not?
Oh, absolutely. And then, yeah, obviously, then your risk tolerances are tested because you've seen your portfolio cut in half. All right, now, are you going to be able to hold in there until it recovers? Should you hold in there until it recovers? I mean, that varies from individual stock to individual stock, but it's certainly going to test your risk tolerance when you get that kind of volatility in a year.
And that's what I think that people don't, you know, because I really get angry, Mike, when I'm listening to the pundits on air, and they keep saying, well, the S&P is paying a higher dividend than the bonds. And I go, yeah, great, except. Now, the bonds are the bonds. I mean, you know, the basis goes up and down, but you're going to get, if you hold them to maturity, you're going to get your money. Okay?
Yeah.
Whereas in the stock, you know, if a stock goes down, and it keeps going down, and it doesn't recover, then you got to be forced to make a decision, and it becomes ugly at times, and then you know other people get blamed because it went down. But that's why you have to be protected and understand. You never buy just for the dividend. The dividend should be a perk to the purchase of the stock that you found that you thought was at a great technical level, and the dividend should be an add-in bonus, don't you think?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. And it'll be interesting as rates are getting raised, you know, they're moving off zero here and whatnot. If we see a rotation like that away from the bond market into the equities, you know, and again, we're going to get pullbacks, we're going to get corrections, you know, and like you said, if in your bond, if you just you can sleep at night knowing that, hey, if I hold this treasury to maturity, you know, I'm going to get my money back. Whereas with the S&P, if, you know, if we have another period, which we will at some point in time, like 08 and 09, where the S&P gets cut in half, are you going to be able to sleep at night? Are you going to be able to hold it? You know, those are the times that really test, you know, again, people's risk tolerances. So, but yeah, it'll be interesting to see, because you're seeing some forecasters talking about, you know, the great rotation from bonds over to equities, and that's going to lead us higher. It'll be interesting to see if that plays out in 2016.
You know, yeah, right. The one problem with experts, okay, and this is one thing I noticed, and I don't even know if you can comment on this, so I'm going to bring it up. But if you can't comment, we'll just move on. But what I hate is when a guy goes on national TV and talks about how bullish he is, but then they, you know, when you go on air, you have to disclose whether or not you own the equity, right? And the guy, he doesn't own it, his family doesn't own it, the firm doesn't own it, nobody owns it, but he's so bullish on it. Now, why would somebody go out and say, I'm so bullish on this particular equity, and they don't even own it? I mean, what do you think of that? Or can you comment?
I kind of take that with a grain of salt, don't you? So, you'd like to see them, if they're going to be banging the drum for something, that they've got some skin in that game. So,
I take it as a grain of poison, because, again, I don't, you know, one thing about me, my boy, is if I go on air and I say that I'm going to short this or I'm going to be long this, You can bet your ass that I got a piece of it, right? I mean, I don't believe in it. I understand, you know, regulations, and that's the other thing that bothers me is everything is so compliant, but then why can somebody go, you know, talk about these stocks that they don't even own? And it, again, I get all that, but it just, I think that, you know, the whole key comes down to is you find a good, solid person who understands the market, somebody like you, who has an understanding and a realistic view, because, you know, we know in the industry a lot of things happen, but if you have a realistic view and you're looking for good reasons to get involved, I think that's the most important thing in investing, don't you think?
Absolutely. And, you know, you've got to be able to take, like we talked about, you know, look at the market over a long period of time and realize that, you know, it's going to grind higher, but there are going to be periods where it's going to be tough to be in the market. But you know, if you take the long-term view, people have been rewarded. So.
And that is correct. And I think that's where a guy like you comes into play. I mean, again, you're a guy that tries to build basis. And again, your background, just to share with everybody. Actually, I'll do that when we come back from the break, because I think it's interesting how you got to the markets. We're hanging out with Mike Brown from BrownCapital. .org, and you know, Mike has been with us for a long time, and he's just really, again, we appreciate his open candor and his respect, his ability to look at markets, and I urge you to check him out as well. This is the Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horns. We're going to stop out here for a break, but make sure if you miss the show or miss a show, you want to hear it again, go to libertytalk.fm on demand, and you can get the show anytime you want. This is the Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horns. We'll be right back after the break. The Bubba Show.
Margie said,
what's up, everybody? Bubba here. It's finally here, the long-awaited Bubba Report, bringing you news from all the trading floors across the globe. We've got Scott Cialady, the cow guy, as seen on CNBC, Fox, and Bloomberg. We've got Keith Bliss, CNBC, Fox, and a floor trader at the New York Stock Exchange. We've got The Badger, who writes the hot topics in the political news. We've got myself putting together my own unique indexes that will help you give you a better idea of what's going on in the market. All you need to do to get a hold of the Bubba Report is go to thebubbashow.org and sign up for the newsletter, or you can email me direct at bubba@thebubbashow.org. We want you to have this report because we've got over 150 years of experience talking about markets, getting ready for the trading, and puts you in the best position to have successful. So email me at bubba@thebubbashow.org to get a copy of your report, or go right to the website, thebubbashow.org. Make sure you get it. It's a must-have for every investor and trader. The Bubba Report. What's up, everybody? Bubba here. It's finally here, the long-awaited Bubba Report, bringing you news from all the trading floors across the globe. We've got Scott Cialady, the cow guy, as seen on CNBC, Fox, and Bloomberg. We've got Keith Bliss, CNBC, Fox, and a floor trader at the New York Stock Exchange. We've got The Badger, who writes the hot topics in the political news. We've got myself putting together my own unique indexes that will help you give you a better idea of what's going on in the market. All you need to do to get a hold of the Bubba Report is go to thebubbashow.org and sign up for the newsletter, or you can email me direct at bubba@thebubbashow.org. We want you to have this report because we've got over 150 years of experience talking about markets, getting ready for the trading, and puts you in the best position to have successful. So email me at bubba@thebubbashow.org to get a copy of your report, or go right to the website, thebubbashow.org. Make sure you get it. It's a must-have for every investor and trader. The Bubba Report. Welcome back to the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz with my friend Mike Brown from BrownCapital.org. Brown Capital, and again, been in the business a long time. But Mike, I think it's interesting, you know, you and I talked out at the ball fields and, you know, started hanging out. And, you know, I said, well, how'd you ever get into the market? And, you know, it was interesting because tell us the changes and how you started, but what's changed since you first got interested in the market?
Oh, I think, you know, when I was interested in spring training, you know, they would have stacks of the Wall Street Journal, USA Today, and so I started reading the journal every day. And of course, back then, you got all your news via the print. And then, you know, television became a bigger deal with CNBC and the rest of them, Fox, you know, Bloomberg. But, you know, when I opened my office in Peoria in 1997, you know, my first computer was a dial-up. You know, and you would maybe dial in three or four times a day, check, you know, see where things were. But, you know, obviously things were still trading, you know, by fractions as opposed to, the, you know, the decimals that we trade by now. And, you know, the technology for me has been the biggest change, you know, in these markets over the last, you know, 20 years almost. So that's, you know, in good ways and bad ways, you know, obviously we don't... We talked about earlier, you can check on your portfolio on your phone while you're driving down the street, whether you should be or not. And you know, I think we both agree that you shouldn't be. And it makes it a lot easier to, I think it was easier in the old days to, you know, check the morning paper, okay, and then go about your day. Whereas now, you know, people, you know, there tends to be some paralysis by analysis when you can check on it, you know, every 5 minutes.
Yeah, and it's funny, they don't even print the tables in the papers anymore.
No, you can't get the tables in the paper. You can't get a box score. You know, some of the things I miss, and I used to, you know, be able to check all the high school, like basketball, check all the box scores and all that. And you can't get any of that anymore. You can't get the stock prints. So it's certainly a very, I think when this period of time is looked at from 100 years from now, 200 years from now, you know, we've had more disruption by technology in a shorter period of time. than in any period probably since the Industrial Revolution. So it's and you know, things are still moving along very quickly. It'll be interesting to see you know, where we're at 10 years from now. But I just think about how you communicated, you know, in 2006 as opposed to 2016.
Well, how about when I started in 1980? We had like 50 traders in one office and had one computer. Okay.
Yeah.
And the one computer, when they'd have an announcement, you know, those days announcements actually meant something because there wasn't the flow of information wasn't so big and so fast. So when the monetary supply came out on Thursday afternoons, there was 50 guys like in the movie Trading Places standing around the computer looking over his shoulder waiting for that. Or when the job number came out, think about that way.
That's right, and you remember the days of the actual, you know, Squawk Box wasn't just the name of a show. They were actually used.
Hey, listen, I go back when we used to have in Chicago, it was Channel 26, WCIU, and it was a 15-minute delay on the tape. And they were only broadcasted from 9:30 to 3 o'clock. And then they had the Richard Ney report on every day. And he'd come and tell you the world was coming to an end every day after that. But there wasn't, you know, if nobody remember. Well, I'm sure many remember it. But CNBC was first financial news network, FNN. That was the first cable news business. But I think that a lot of the stuff that happens now is actually more of a disservice to a lot of people. And I think that's why you're seeing a lot of people move away from some of these financial networks, because again, you know, you can't, it's impossible to try to play the news, because once the news hits the street, it's already been priced in and everybody's already traded a million times, right?
Yeah, I mean, you look at obviously, you know, the retail guy, there's no way you can be faster than a lot of the algorithmic computer trading that's going on. That news is priced in before the average guy hears it, that's for sure. So
It's just interesting how markets have changed and you know, the flow of information has changed. But one thing that hasn't changed, Mike, is basic raw technical data versus fundamental data. And I think that has to be a way that we have to really get back to, because people became too dependent. You know, we go back to the internet bubble where, you know, the stocks are going up and down every day, you know, just buy or whatever, .com, buy it, and the housing bubble, and you know, we kind of get spoiled by this, didn't we?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I remember when it was revenue didn't matter, it was face views and clicks and all that stuff, and of course, as we found out, you know, the fundamentals, you know, did matter. And the companies that had good fundamentals, I mean, some of them got thrown out, you know, with the baby with the bathwater in 01 and 02. But you look around now, and, you know, the Amazons of the world, the Googles, the ones that were generating revenue, have, you know, they survived, and, you know, the myriad of ones that weren't generating revenue are, you know, have gone the way of the dodo bird. So,
you know, it's just funny that, you know, as we move on and we see something change, but really the more things change, as they say, the more they stay the same. And the tortoise always wins the race. The slow and steady are always the better off in this business, are they not?
Oh, absolutely. And I think you're certainly seeing a sea change in the tech industry where, you know, in 01, 99, 2000, 2001, I mean, they were rushing just to get anything to the IPO market. And then, you know, last year, which was, you know, in 2015, I think we had half the tech IPOs that we had in 2014. I think it was 23 compared to 55 in 2014. So you're seeing the gestating period for IPOs, you know, they're taking a great deal longer. They're making sure, you know, most of the money is made in the private market now, you know, the private equity investors in those early stages of those IPOs, and, you know, they're not bringing them along until, you know, they have a tremendous amount of revenue already.
Well, and again, there's, you know, there's so much more information, you know, out there that, you know, it's changed the dynamics, and now they're gauging, well, can I get enough money for it? You know, because it used to be IPOs used to be like stealing, and now they're, well, you know, I don't know, some of them are great, some of them aren't, and Does it bother you, Mike, that you know the whole growth cycle over the last 7 years has really been really built by merger and acquisition and not by actual true growth in the companies?
Yeah, I mean, that's certainly a concern. It's been growth through stock buybacks, M&A activity. We haven't really seen, revenue growth. That is definitely a concern as we move into 2016. And, hoping it's an election year. I mean, you hope you get we've had really 7 years of, administration that's not very business friendly. I think our economy could be growing a lot faster than it is. A myriad of things. Obamacare is one of them. We're created because people couldn't afford health insurance, so let's find people now who can't afford health insurance. That thing's got to go away. And I think, if we can get some, Reagan era type deregulation and what people don't realize is every layer of government that you add on is a tax. Somebody's got to pay for that. Right now, I think we're laboring under tremendous tax given the size of our government. That's something that's got to be changed.
Yeah, I mean, the big government and a lot of the problems we have here, which brings us into ISIS and the way that it's being handled. What's your take of this whole situation?
I think we definitely have to ramp up efforts. I do agree that we don't want boots on the ground. I think that is something that that they want. I think those are playing into their hands. But we absolutely have to ramp up, our efforts in the air and destroying them. I think you're going to, let the British and the French put some boots on the ground for a change. I mean, they're as at risk as we are, probably more so. And, with our air power and, put some NATO troops in there, I think it could be rolled back fairly easily. I say easily. It's not, we're not dealing with a real sophisticated power here. Unlike Al Qaeda, who can go dark, and like cockroaches can scurry into the corners. In order for ISIS to be in existence as a caliphate, they have to control area. They have to expand that area. If you're really the voice of God and God's getting his territory rolled back on him, are you the voice of God? Because that really should not happen. So, if you can hem them in and, start to constrict their territory and take territory back from them, I think that will fall apart fairly quickly. But you're going to have the will to do that. And, certainly our administration, for whatever reason, has been late to the game and has let them proliferate to where it's going to be more difficult than it probably needed to be if they'd have been on it early. But I do think that it may take another big attack before the will is really galvanized, but it will come and we will destroy them.
I'd like us to destroy them now because I think that it's, our current leadership is not very good and our whole current system is not very good. But we'll talk more about that when we come back from the break. I'm with Mike Brown, browncapital.org, Brown Capital. And again, I urge you to check him out. What's your phone number again there, sir?
309-674-1040.
And he's right in the heart of Illinois. And I just urge you to check him out because he's got the right view for everybody, just to give you a general view on what's going on and without great anticipation. So we will stop by here for a break. This is The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz. Make sure you check out thebubbashow.org or go to bubbatrading.com. And if you want to get the show on demand, you can always go to libertytalk.fm. This is The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz. We'll be right back after the break.
I'm thumbing my way into North Carolina.
Welcome back to The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz hanging out with Mike Brown from Brown Capital, browncapital.org. Make sure you check him out. So, Mike, we have to destroy ISIS, and unfortunately, the current leadership doesn't seem to be too interested in that. I mean, it's hard for them to even say that they're terrorists. And what do you take away from that?
Well, I do think that you've got to come to the realization that, Islam, their iteration of Islam is not compatible with modern democracy. They are creating a theocracy which they are reading the Quran to the letter. Right? So to say that they're not Islam is wrong. And, you know, to say that, you know, they're distorting Islam or whatever, those are all wrong. They are reading Islam in the 5th century as it was created to the letter. And that's what that's the law they're following. You know, things that we find that we see as brutal and despicable in this day and age, the beheadings, the crucifixions, those are all laws that are laid out in the Quran. You know, there's a lot of that in the Bible, too, but we don't read it literally. They are reading it literally. So they are Islamic. They are terrorists. Islam is a religion of terror, if you follow it by the letter. So it's not a peaceful religion, as you know, maybe in its modern incantation, yes. But following it in the 5th century incantation, which is what ISIS is doing, it is not a religion of peace. And you're going to have to get your arms around that and combat that. And until they're willing to do that, which our administration is not, you know, they're too much with the political correct bullshit, we're going to have a tough time containing it. Now, when you hit it head on, I think it will fall apart fairly quickly. I mean, they're not technology-wise, they control a very, there's not a lot of natural resources in that area other than the oil. We have been interdicting their oil, so hopefully that'll cut off some of their money. But it's, you gotta know it for what it is, which is they are reading a literal translation of the Quran. So it's as Islamic as it gets. And they're, part of the reason they're killing a lot of Muslims is that they see them as apostates who do not follow the law, the word of the prophet, literally, and therefore they are, in their eyes, they're as bad, if not worse, than the infidels. So, the Christians, if you pay them a tax and are submissive to them, they allow them to live, whereas a Muslim who doesn't follow their version of the Quran is all automatically doomed to death. So it's a bad deal. I mean, they're bad people. We're gonna have to eradicate them. But we certainly faced bigger dangers in the history of the United States than ISIS. It just happens to be the current one.
So now, we've got many, many issues throughout the society. I mean, and I think another issue I think is the Federal Reserve. What is your take on the Federal Reserve?
Boy, they certainly had loose policies for a very long time. It's going to be a magic trick to see how they bring their bring all of this debt under control and in line. I mean, they have expanded the Federal Reserve's balance sheet to historic proportions, and how they're going to shrink that balance sheet, is anybody's guess. I mean, there's nothing you can look at in history and say this is how it's going to happen, this is how it's going to play out, because we've never seen anything like this. So it's I don't expect us to be interest rates to be much higher 5 years from now than they are right now, for that simple fact that the government and the Fed's balance sheet is just too big. They would not be able to service that debt. So unless they can shrink that, and we can shrink our federal deficit, you really can't raise interest rates. The only way that we've been able to survive, and we're not Greece at this point, even though our debt has quadrupled from the late 80s, is that the debt service on that has remained roughly the same, because interest rates are, have been zero or close to zero for a very long time, and that's allowed us to service that debt. But if interest rates were normalized, money markets were paying 4 or 5%, the debt service for the government, they would not be able to do. So that's, the Fed is, they're in the hot box, because I don't know how you draw in that balance sheet. And I don't think they know how either. So
does the Fed, because the mandate that was written in 1913 is not what they're following now, do they need to be readjusted and changed as a central bank?
I think so. I mean, they certainly are more into massaging the markets, trying to provide soft landings, etc. They're certainly a lot more integral into the economy than I think they were ever intended to be. you know, how you draw them out of there without, you know, destroying the markets, you know, in the short term, I don't know. But, yeah, I think, you know, it would be nice if the next Fed president we have follows a little more hands-off doctrine. You know, we're going to have crashes. You're going to have, you know, markets are going to get ahead of themselves, and then, you know, that's part of the process, you know. That's how we create things, you know. Bubbles are created on the Internet. It's a wonderful thing. I don't think anybody would say that it's not a wonderful thing. But a lot of capital in the creation of the Internet was destroyed, you know, in the tech bubble. But, you know, we were able to pick things up and move on, and, you know, the technology continued to advance. I mean, it's part of that, you know, creation and destruction are part of the economic cycle. And, you know, I don't think it's the Fed's place to change that. And I think they've tried to change that to a certain degree. And, we'll see how that plays out over the next 10 years because, you know, their balance sheet can't get much bigger.
Well, their only leverage is 77-1. What's the big deal? I mean, Lehman Brothers is only 38. So, I mean, what's the big deal? I mean, so, you know, they can print for more money if they need it.
That's the epoch that I hope our children don't see. Is if the U.S. dollar is no longer the world's reserve currency at some point, and we actually have to live within our means as a country, then that's when the chickens come home to roost. You know, which is why you want to see them get that under control so that doesn't happen. But it's gonna take, you know, a forceful Fed leader, which I don't think Janet Yellen is, and it's going to take... you know, an administration with some strong will to make that happen. So let's say that we don't want to hand this country to our children, our grandchildren, you know, with $20 trillion of debt. I mean, we've got to bring that in line.
Well, I agree with that, but so what's the answer?
We've got to live within our means. We got, you know, we've got to, and the entitlements, a lot of the entitlement stuff's got to go away. You know, so a lot of the spending from the federal government has got to be drawn down. I mean, we don't need the government to be this big. So you've got to shrink government, shrink the regulations, let the private sector, to a certain extent, police itself. You know, the old saying, caveat emptor, you know, let the buyer beware. You know, we don't have to have 10 federal guarantees on every product that's out there. You know, so those things have to happen. You know, we've probably got to shrink the government in all phases, defense as well. So, you know, we don't need to be the world's policeman. We are, but we don't need to be everywhere. And so, you know, bad things are going to happen. You know, we had the shooters in San Bernardino. You know, LA 9/11. I mean, America will march on. We don't need, you know, a Six Sigma level of protection. You know, because I think the cost of that is just where you end up with your $20 trillion of debt. You know, we don't need the government in every aspect of our lives. And I think if we can roll that back, make a smaller government, then, you know, we can start to shrink that deficit. And that's something that, you know, we need to, you know, Reagan did it in the 80s, you know, and, you know, end of the 90s, and then, you know, Clinton, you know, did it as well. And so, you know, it's really been the 2000s where we've really expanded government by tremendous factor, and, you know, that we've got to go. The pendulum's got to swing back the other way. Otherwise, you know, we will end up being Greece or one of those if we're no longer the world's reserve currency.
And there is the story according to Mike Brown, browncapital.org. Michael, thank you so much. Merry Christmas, Happy New Year to you, my friend.
Merry Christmas, Happy Hanukkah. It was a pleasure as always, Todd. Pleasure as always.
It's great to have you on. And again, I urge you to check him out. I mean, you know, he tells it straight. He doesn't do anything against it. He just, here's the options that you have. Here's what you look at. And this is what I'm thinking. And I think that's something that's real important because it's important to you as an investor. This has been The Bubba Show. We spent the day with our friend Mike Brown. You want to catch The Bubba Show on demand, you can go to libertytalk.fm. We'll see you back here next time, same station. The Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horace. We'll see you later, everybody. Thank you so much for being here.
Put some feel good in my soul.
Revolutionary Talk for Revolutionary Times. Liberty Talk FM.